Sari, Hank, real fast, tell me what's the easiest choice that you can make of all choices.
The pizza that is currently in the fridge.
Oh, baby, I love to hear that.
Easiest choice? Take a nap, always. What do I want to do? Lay? Nothing.
That's great. Hey, here's a super easy choice, just right off the top of my head. Selling with Shopify. Now, I know all about Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, online or in person, with the internet's best converting checkout, 35% better on average compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. But Hank, why don't you tell us why you and your company, DFTBA, love Shopify so much?
We started DFTBA in 2007, and we had some non-Shopify providers early on, and switching over to Shopify was the best choice that we could have made. Now, we didn't know that when we made it, but it seemed like they knew what was going on and they were going to be around for a long time. And it turned out we were right. And now they really are the industry standard. They have a whole developer ecosystem where lots of people make products inside of their app system. And so you can always add new and cool things into your Shopify so that you can get all of the things that you need to get done for your specific business done. And I feel very kind of grateful that we picked Shopify when we did so that we have never had to switch, because switching is bad.
Wondering if you should give Shopify a try, like Hank and DFTBA are using it. Let me make that decision a little easier for you. What if all it costs to try it for a month was $1? That's right. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/tangents.
Welcome to SciShow Tangents. It's the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green, a man who did not open the show flow before this began, so who knows how it's going to go. Joining me as always this week is our science expert, Sari Riley.
Hello. It's going great. You did it good so far.
And our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Hello.
Who writes the show flows.
Yeah, and I'm a little worried now.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen. But this is the thing. When you don't know what the future holds, everything can go totally off the rails. And so what you need is to number the days. The days are numbered.
We're all dying.
Your days are numbered.
You have a death counter? Me too.
I love that we have sort of settled on a calendar that we use that makes absolutely no sense. There's like so many better ways to do it, but we're stuck with this way, and it's easier to stick with the way that we have than to incur the costs of changing to a better calendar.
Yeah, we argue about daylight savings time. We don't argue about December.
No, but we should. We should. It's ridiculous to have a bunch of months that have 30 days, a bunch of months that have 31 days, and one month that has 28 days. Sometimes.
Did some monk do this to us? Is that what happened?
That was a lot of people added up. There was a period of time. This is my favorite calendar trivia. There was a period of time when we only had 10 months. You know, like December is currently
the names
the 12th
make sense.
Month.
Yeah,
and that makes no sense that it would be DEC and October is the 10th month. Not making any sense.
Oh.
A bunch of nonsense occurred. But back before we introduced some of the early months that bumped all those ones later, there was winter time when it wasn't a month.
What?
It was just like, it's winter.
We'll take a break.
Oh.
Don't worry about it.
I would love that.
We'll get back to you when it melts.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We can't. There's nothing to do with this time. We don't need to know when to plant. It's very cold.
Are you telling me October used to be the eighth month?
That's why it's called October.
What the fuck? I never thought of that.
Yeah, it's September is 7, but it's the 9th month. November is 9, but it's the 11th month.
They were all named after guys.
No, that's where July, August came in, where they were the guys were like, I want to be
month.
In the calendar. Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know anything about anything. This is great. Thank you for teaching me.
Yeah, and Monday is named after the moon, and Thursday is named after Thor.
That's fine. Acceptable. Thor's Wednesday back in the limelight, Odin. Baby. We're all, yeah. We can all get behind
Wednesday
Thor.
Wednesday is Odin for some reason?
Yeah.
Absolutely wild. Anyway, these are all things that you know now, but you don't need to, because what you need to know is what day of the week it is and what day of the month it is, and so you have wall calendars. And you can buy wall calendars at complexlycalendars.com, which I will not shut up about for as long as they are on sale. Anyway, the people at Complexly on various teams, so Eons, Bizarre Beasts, SciShow, SciShow Space, and Journey to the Microcosmos have been working on very thoughtful, well-designed, high-quality calendars that are going to do the job that you need done by calendars, but also we made them very pretty. And we put in a ton of good information because we know you like that good information. Why would you be here otherwise? And also, it helps us continue to make the things that we make, which we love to do. Now, we didn't do a SciShow Tangents calendar, which is a bummer. But if we do in the future, Sari, what should the theme be?
Well, I feel like naturally we need... Your ideas are just recycled new ideas, so we could do a Tangents animal sex calendar and just do like weird animal reproduction.
No, that's done. Really you're good done. Idea. Okay. The story that's is really done. Why idea. Would we have any other idea?
Oh, okay.
We should
that's
have,
it.
We and should then have on asked the last you earlier.
Day of every month, we have a butt fact for you.
Oh, a little tiny butt fact.
Also, it could also be a butt calendar.
We should have maybe asked Sari about this a few months ago.
I have great ideas. My rate is $35 an hour.
Well, I mean that, but you did that in like 35 seconds.
Yeah, so
it was sense of
that
work.
Was a freebie. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was you guys all get freebies because you're my friend. 50 cents.
No, both of those are great. Oh man, I can't wait for the 2024 SciShow Tangents animal sex calendar. I don't know how many good animal sex photos we can find. Maybe we should just hire an illustrator.
We should get somebody out in the field taking pictures of animals having sex.
Yeah.
You know?
I've seen so many bugs having sex and now that I'm gardening regularly. So
yeah,
I'll just.
They're always doing that out there.
Pictures.
They never stop.
No. That's why there's so many.
And there's also real calendars you can go by too that exist now.
Right. Don't just wait. Well, that's the thing.
Don't just. You'll
that
need
calendar is not going to help you this year.
Yes.
You still
really,
need a this
really
year
confused.
Calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a wall calendar. It's going to run out at the end of this year, so.
That's right.
Interesting.
And the ones we're making are nicer than that, Sari. That's too little.
Yeah. Yeah. This one is pretty,
can't even
it's
see
like
it.
A dollhouse size wall calendar on this background that's right here.
This isn't like the kind of calendar that like the Nature Conservancy sends you for free because you donated to them one time. No, these are high quality, made in America, beautiful 11.5 by 11.5
calendars.
I think you need to rebrand calendars with a more fun name, maybe. Calendaritos.
Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I'll be awarding as we play, and at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Sari.
So I have a question for you both before I do my poem. Do you want a PG-13 rated poem or a G-rated poem?
That's a ridiculous question.
This is a concerning
an excellent
question.
No, I mean, like, it's obvious. The answer is very clear to me.
Is it the same poem with words omitted, or is it two different poems?
It's the last stanza is different.
Interesting. Give us PG-13 first.
Yeah, I want this to be only appropriate for those 13 and older.
Yeah. Okay.
All creatures on Earth, both humongous and small, with legs and eyeballs or worm-like that crawl, with spine or not, or flamboyant or drab, shark, starfish, or crab, they once were a bab. Helpless and hapless and careless, so young, tadpoles in a frog pond with newly formed lungs. Some families have thousands, like larvae for bees, but one dolphin calf joins its pod in the seas. These alien creatures show up when we fuck, and through shrewdness or toughness or just plain dumb luck, we feed and raise them and save them from predation, then kick them out of the nest. Be the next generation.
The swear scared me a little bit. That's
was
why
not
it's
what I was expecting.
Yeah. You're allowed one fucking PG-13 movies.
Yeah. Well, you just hit two.
Oh, I did say two. Now it's R-rated.
No, it's
R-rated podcast.
So the topic for today's SciShow Tangents is babies, just for clarity. Babs. As Sari said, that one, Babs also was threw me for a loop. Bab.
I love a Bab.
Sari, what is a baby?
So baby, it's after it's popped out, then it's a baby. It's a
Or of its shell or its.
Yes, of its shell, okay. Of its amniotic sac. Mm-hmm. We use babies colloquially to refer to plant babies or other things, but babies are pretty solidly like an animal stage of development.
Okay.
So after birth, after the hatching or the coming out of the sac, the amniotic sac, then you have an infant or a newborn, which is baby, mm-hmm. and usually in humans for like 4 weeks you're considered
it's only a newborn baby. For 4 weeks?
And it's considered a newborn for 4 weeks. Okay. And then question mark. Then growth sure. and development.
And then you for a long time you're not a baby until you're somebody's baby. Then you're mm-hmm. a baby again, apparently, which is a weird term of endearment.
You can also nowadays decide that you're a baby. I'm baby, you know? I'm baby. You know what I'm talking about?
What?
Yeah, no. I do.
I'm baby.
I'm baby.
You don't know I'm baby?
What's baby?
You know, like when you're an adult and maybe you're laying on a big blanket on the sofa and you say, I'm baby.
I'm like, please take care of me. I'm helpless. Oh, I'm cute. No,
yeah, this is a piece of slang that you have both heard.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's old slang. This is millennial slang that cool kids wouldn't even say.
I'm baby. Will you say I'm baby when you need someone to take care of you?
I'm baby. Yeah.
This is why everybody should be Gen X. It's just easier to not have cringy stuff like that.
Oh no.
Oh. I'm baby.
Yeah.
That's what you would say. I'm baby. Bring me a hot cocoa.
Yeah. Or like, I'm baby. Call 911. I don't know. Like, that's a meme that I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah. If like you're if you're feeling like you're lazy, then that's it. Uh-huh. That's an I'm baby situation.
Okay.
Baby.
I feel caught up now, but I really was all the way behind. That is not familiar to me.
It was probably when you were having a baby. Then that's when
maybe
I'm
that
baby
was it.
Happened.
Yep. Yep. And then TikTok came back and you skipped right over I'm baby.
Yeah. Now I'm listening to Young Gravy all the time.
I saw a picture of Young Gravy yesterday. I was like, who the hell is Young Gravy?
That's what I
know.
Same reaction.
I saw a picture of Young Gravy the other day and I was like, wow. I don't know why that works, but it sure does.
Yeah, it got on my news feed. Young Gravy and someone's mom.
Yes, and Addison Rae's mom went to the VMAs
mom.
Together.
Yeah.
He's baby.
He's baby.
He is baby. He is baby. So,
this podcast is not about Young Gravy. I think that it's fair, like, definitely we've got a vibe around what a baby is, but it's not entirely clear, and it's never going to be. Do we know where the word baby comes from? It seems like an old one.
It is an old one. It's of uncertain origin, like so many of the words. But we think mm-hmm. it is probably like a baby babbling. Like they just heard the noise that a baby makes. So kind of like a Pokemon. Pikachu says Pikachu. And then they were like, that's your name, I guess. And so babies went, ba 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 ba. And they were like, ba 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 ba. Baby.
You must be a baby.
Yeah. You must be a baby.
You must be a baby.
What are you trying to tell me?
Do all Pokemon say their own name?
Yes.
There's some exceptions.
There's some exceptions. And in the game,
Mewtwo
games,
can
they
talk,
don't.
For instance. He can speak full English.
Does he say Mewtwo when he like does a move?
No. He would say, hi, I'm Mewtwo, and shake your hand.
He'd probably say, like, bow to me, human, also. Mewtwo's pretty.
Oh, doesn't sound very nice.
But mostly, yeah, they all say that.
I would think that Mr. Mime probably doesn't say anything.
I think he does
say. He says Mr. Mime.
I think he does. That does seem like a missed opportunity.
Also, like Young Gravy. And
wait, he dates whose mom? Ash's mom?
Well, there's some subtle implication that Ash and Mr. Mime are in love. Or Ash's mom and Mr. Mime are
Are you telling me that Mr. Mime has Young Gravy energy or that Young Gravy has Mr. Mime energy?
Young Gravy has Mr. Mime energy.
Mr. Mime had stepdad energy before anyone else.
Yeah.
Okay. This is great. I feel great, everybody. Babies are Pokemon. Mr. Mime is Young Gravy. Uh-huh. And now we're going to move on to the quiz portion of our show. This week, we're going to be playing a baby's truth or fail. So life is a baby. It seems like it's pretty great. I'm baby.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about things like taxes or adult responsibilities. You just get put down and you stay there and you focus on what matters, food and sleep. Except, of course, the world is full of many dangers.
Oh, gosh.
The following are three stories of those dangers experienced by babies of various animals, but only one of these stories is true. Which one is it? Are you ready to hear about scary baby life?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it's not too bad.
Okay.
Story number one, naked mole rats live in colonies that can have up to 300 workers in them. They're like ants, but they're rats. And while researchers used to think that the size of those colonies was the result of lots of inbreeding, they now suspect another factor, kidnapping. Naked mole rat colonies will sometimes invade other naked mole rat colonies and take some of their pups in the process and turn them into workers for their colonies. But it might not be that one. It might be story number two, which is that the Baltic comb jellyfish reproduce by releasing hundreds of eggs and sperm into the water. The eggs and sperm will then find each other and fertilize and hatch into jellyfish larvae. But not all of the larvae are meant to live. A fraction of the eggs will hatch into a more simplistic form that can't develop into a more advanced jellyfish, and it will act as a decoy, luring predators into eating them instead of their siblings that could actually develop into a adult jellyfish. Or it could be story number three. Pandas gestate their babies only for a month, and when they are born, the babies are tiny and underdeveloped for the first days of their life. Their fragile appearance in the first few days means that they can sometimes just look like they're dead, when in fact they are just sleeping, sometimes leading parents to accidentally abandon them because they think they are dead. Is it story number one, naked mole rat pups get kidnapped for work? Story number two, decoy jellyfish babies are offered up to predators to save the rest? Or story number three, panda babies accidentally play dead so well that they just get left behind? They're
That's
just sleepy.
Such a panda thing to do. That seems like
they
a panda
are
thing.
A mess.
Yeah,
aren't they?
They aren't doing anything right over there. So
yeah. You know, pandas got the name because when they walk around, they go panda, 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 panda.
Yeah, it's really easy to name animals.
Uh-huh. Yeah, jellyfish just go jellyfish.
Jellyfish.
Jellyfish. Jellyfish. And naked mole rats, that was a wild one. Yeah. They're like, naked mole rat.
Yeah. They say a whole sentence.
When scientists first discovered naked mole rats, and they're like, what should we call these?
Naked
and
mole
naked
rat.
Naked mole rat looked them directly into the eyes.
Yeah.
This one is one where this is the first time in a long time I felt like all three of them are true. I couldn't possibly
start really
real, to
feel really real, don't they? Yeah.
Unravel this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the panda babies one just seems like so real. The naked mole rat one, I'm not confident enough in knowing anything about how naked mole rats work to guess that that is right.
They have, we've talked previously, I think on this podcast, about the fact that naked mole rats have queens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like a queen rat mole, or I think it's a rat. And they have like, that gives birth to all of the colony's babies, and everybody like takes care of her. And
right.
So they are ant-like.
Mm-hmm. I'm going with decoy jellyfish babies because I think that it seems like a thing they would do. Poop out some real eggs, poop out some fake eggs. Eat the fake eggs. Ha ha ha. My babies will survive.
Okay, here's my new theory. Pandas don't go far enough away to abandon their babies. Do they have a big range? Do they just stay where they are? Who knows? I agree with decoy jellyfish babies.
Oh.
Oh, you're still going with Sari.
Yeah.
Well, this week we were too clever for you both because it was the naked mole rats.
Wow. That seems so much meaner than I would attribute to them.
Yeah. So they have like a colony with lots of workers, and the one queen, she could produce 30 pups each litter, which is wild. But while research with captive mole rats found that sometimes they expand their colony by kidnapping pups from other colonies, this pup napping had not been seen in the wild until researchers started following marked and tracked mole rats in Kenya's Meru National Park. And the researchers found that colonies would sometimes expand into areas of neighboring colonies, essentially invading those colonies. And the mole rats from the invaded colony would usually like retreat into a further part of the nest or just leave altogether, I guess, and hope to find a new home. But as the researchers kept tracking the colonies, they found that there were a few pups from the invaded colonies living amongst their invaders as workers, leading them to conclude that the pups had been kidnapped and put to work. This would make the naked mole rats more similar to ants than we even thought, because some species of ants will steal larvae and pupa from other species to make them work in their own colonies.
They will?
Yes. Yes. Not like competitors of the same species, but other species of ant. But this behavior in mole rats has only been observed a few times, so we don't know how widespread it is.
Huh.
Jellyfish. This is not what happens, but they do, just as Sari was saying, have a tremendous number of babies. And of course, almost all of those babies get sort of eaten up by things. But when there are these sort of like boom and bust cycles, the adult jellyfish seem to do fine. And a 2008 report indicates why, which is that during the busts, the babies will get to a certain size and there won't be anything around for the adult jellyfish to eat. So they will eat the baby jellyfish that have started to succeed. And they'll be like, thank you for collecting your own food for a little while in this messy, difficult moment. Now I'm going to eat you. They've even done like in laboratory research experiments where they let where they sort of like have adults and babies and the adults just completely eat every single one that is available.
Wow. Just like boomers. Am I right?
Oh my God. And the panda babies, you are right that pandas give birth to useless little pups and they make lots of mistakes in their lives, but they have never been documented thinking a baby is dead and leaving it behind.
Oh,
the babies are born really, really early and need their moms for basically everything. They nurse 14 times a day. They need their moms in order to go to the bathroom. Like literally they need to be like stimulated to get their strong enough muscles to poop yet.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's really cute. They could be like shocked into pooping. So they like get their muscles going and then they're like, oh, a little poop came out.
Yeah, you have to surprise them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, oftentimes panda babies do not have great outcomes, but this is not why. So congratulations on both of you for being tied. Next up, we're going to take a short break. Then it'll be time for the fact off.
Slasher Tangents is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million order stage and everywhere in between. Sari and Hank, can you name anything that works so well? It's practically magic.
Dragonflies.
Toilets.
What? Yeah, okay. Well, here's one off the top of my head. How about selling with Shopify? Ooh. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Ooh. Not to mention, it's got award-winning customer support there to help you on your path to success. And those are just a few reasons to love Shopify. But Hank, what does your company, DFTBA, like so much about Shopify?
We've been using Shopify, I think, for over 10 years now, and it really has scaled extremely effectively with us. It is both a huge amount of information at your fingertips, but also in a way that makes it fairly easy to make the decisions you need to make, learn the things you need to learn, and do the things you need to do. It's all in there. And it's one of the great joys of my life is going into the Shopify backend and being like, look at all these people who wanted a thing that I had.
What a rich life you lead indeed.
And if you want to experience great joys like that too, I've got a magic trick for you. Poof. You can now try Shopify for a month for only $1. That's right. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, and experience the little joys of looking at the back end of a store. shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Abracadabra.
Slasher Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook, and I don't even know what that means to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something probably too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice, huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple hundred dollar bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services, and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did. Thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
All right, everybody, it's time for the Fact Off. Our panelists have all brought science facts in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented their facts, I will judge them and award Hank bucks any way I see fit. But to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question. Using data gathered by 538 from the U.S. National Center for Health Statistics and the U.S. Social Security Administration, the data journalist Matt Stiles compiled a ranking of the most popular birthdays between the years of 1994 and 2014. The least popular birthday was December 25th. What month and day were the most popular?
It's almost my birthday. So I'm going to say September 24th.
I'm going to also say there were a lot of kids at my birthday in my classes.
Yeah, me too.
May 24th.
Sam said September 24th, which was remarkably close to the actual day, which is September 9th.
Wow.
Congratulations.
January, huh? People just get...
It's cold.
Apparently. And it's interesting that December 25th is least popular because that indicates not that that's the least popular day for babies to get born, but people are like, can you just mark it down as the 26th, please? Like, I don't want my baby to be born on Christmas.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Try to hold it in till the end of the day.
Or maybe, I guess, C-sections probably aren't often scheduled on the 25th.
That's also true. Big day off. There's a lot of confounding factors here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like that better as the explanation than holding it in. Everybody wait. Okay, this one's for Jesus. You can't take that from him. Interestingly, Sam, of the top 10 birthdays, 9 of them were in September.
Mm-hmm,
September birthdays very, very generally correspond to conception periods around the winter holidays when people maybe have a little bit less to do.
Yeah.
Aren't so
stuck
busy.
Stuck in the house.
So that means that Sam gets to decide who goes first. Sam, what do you think?
I'll go first. This might just be my own bias, but the 90s felt like a real boom period for classical music in popular culture. Often it was the butt of the joke, shorthand, and stuff like TV shows for out-of-touch elites such as Fraser Crane. If you could be guaranteed to have a baby Fraser Crane, wouldn't you do it? I mean, he's an extremely popular talk show host, not to mention he has got a PhD in psychology, and he's a published author.
And his apartment is dope.
It's a great apartment. Yeah, and he loves his dad. Which brings us to another touchstone of 90s culture. Pregnant people putting big headphones on their bellies to play classical music for their unborn children in the hopes of achieving the Mozart effect, aka having a baby genius. But where did this idea come from? And did it work? Are all those 90s kids who listen to Mozart in utero regular brainiacs? As for where the idea came from, in 1993, a psychologist named Frances H. Rauscher ran a test at UC Irvine wherein she had college students listen to one of three things while performing tests. Those three things were silence, repetitive study music, which I assume is the lo-fi hip-hop study beats of its time, and some Mozart selections. And what Dr. Rauscher discovered was that after listening to Mozart, students performed better at spatial awareness-based tasks for about 15 minutes, which... also sounds kind of ludicrous to me. I don't really understand how that would work, but mm-hmm. I'm not a doctor.
You know, small sample size college students. It's good old psychology research.
And that was it for the paper, basically. But it was quickly picked up by such lofty publications as the New York Times, which mm-hmm. reported that classical music can improve SAT scores was the direction it chose to go with it. And what I can only assume was a pop science game of telephone commenced, ending with playing music for your baby in the womb makes for one smart baby. And even late-cum parents of children who were already out tried to get in on the act, and classical music being played in daycares was a common occurrence, and even in some states, a law.
Whoa!
Yeah.
And like fluoride in the water.
Yeah, they had to play 1 hour of classical music. And did it work? There have been many studies in the intervening decades. And in 2010, the University of Vienna performed a meta-analysis of 40 of those studies on the Mozart effect and concluded that there is no evidence to support that it's a real thing.
I'm shocked. Shocked.
There is a bit of evidence that learning music can make kids a little bit smarter.
A like, completely different like thing.
A 2014
entirely
Harvard,
unrelated.
I know. I'm going to say
listening to music.
A 2014 Harvard study put 29 4-year-olds through a year of music lessons and recorded a 2.7 point IQ increase on average.
Wow.
But that's not nothing. As you noted, not really the same thing at all. That's just the closest that we've gotten so far. And as of 2013, more than 80% of Americans think that music could improve a child's intelligence, which just goes to show you that maybe media outlets could be a little bit more careful with their reporting.
Yeah. What happens? What happens when you put young gravy on the belly? This is the important question. Because Mozart's one thing, and I recognize his genius, but like, do you get just a 6'3" dreamboat in a fur coat?
I think you get a Mr. Mime. The baby comes out. Its first words are
Mr. Mime. Mr. Mime. Okay. I like this, Sam. It has a lot going for it. I like that people will believe anything and that we need to outline the times in the past when we believed anything because it makes us feel better about now when we currently still believe anything.
Yeah.
And also gives us a little bit of insight
something
into maybe what to look out for.
Sure.
Sari, what do you know about babies?
Well, like we've said, human babies are pretty helpless when they're born. They can't really move, their skulls are squishy and fragile, and basically they need a lot of caregiving to survive. And if they're born premature, which is before 37 weeks, they're in need of even more specialized care. In the mid-1800s, a French obstetrician named Dr. Stéphane Tarnier is generally considered to be the first doctor to take the idea of an incubator from chicken raising applications and use it to keep premature infants warm. And in the late 1800s, Dr. Pierre Boudin built on that work to figure out other care these infants needed, like human contact and nutrition and whatnot. In fact, in 1896, Dr. Boudin showcased his work with incubators at Berlin's Great Industrial Exposition as a Kinderbrutenstalt, or child hatchery. And he did so with the help of an assistant named Martin Cooney. And Martin Cooney had kind of a mysterious past. He was born as Michael Cohen in Prussia, bluffed a lot when it came to his background, and worked his way into an apprenticeship in the medical field without a real degree, as far as historians have found thus far. So we're off to a great start for a guy working with medicine and young babies.
We're going to get double dubious today.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But after that first exhibit, he found his calling in what one historian called, quote, vigilante medicine.
Oh, no.
Became known as...
He snuck around with Mozart tapes and he played them for babies.
And he became known as the incubator doctor, creating neonatal intensive care units, or NICUs, around Europe and the United States for exhibitions, fairs, and carnivals through the 1940s. And one of his most famous exhibitions was a more permanent installment at the Coney Island Boardwalk in New York State called the Infantorium, which followed the same business model as the rest of them.
There's a business model? What's the business model?
He imported the latest French incubators because they had been working on technology the longest with a careful temperature and filtered air regulation. He had a paid staff of nurses who lived on site for 24-hour care and many collaborations with American doctors who had medical degrees and accreditation. He charged visitors 25 cents each to wander through and see the premature infants being cared for, as that was the marvel.
Was it like, where was, it outside? Was it like a storefront?
It was like on the boardwalk of Coney Island or something?
Yeah, it was on the boardwalk. So it was just like a building that you walk in.
It was like a banana stand, but with babies.
You could walk in one and see some sword swallowers, and then you walk in another and you see some babies.
What?
Because everyone
Where did the babies come from?
Well, I'm getting there. So the babies came from families, obviously, who had premature babies. And he didn't charge any of them for this top-notch medical care and didn't discriminate about what babies he took in.
Okay.
And so
I don't know whether to like this guy or not.
That's how I feel, too. As wild as this whole thing is, and he was criticized for being a quack doctor or putting babies in a carnival alongside fire eaters, this free care was really, really important at the time because a lot of the sick or premature infants that came to Cooney were rejected by U.S. hospitals. So in the early 1900s, they didn't have the staff or the equipment for round-the-clock neonatal care. Or when hospitals started acquiring maybe one incubator, it wasn't as high quality or robust as the ones that he imported.
He had the best of the best.
He had the best of the best. And they didn't have NICU wings, and it was way too expensive for parents to afford months of care for their children. So Cooney offered a last-ditch effort for survival. And by some estimates, of the 8,000 or so babies that ended up in Cooney's care over the years, over 6,500 survived. They grew up into adults who have, in some cases, retold their stories. And science communicators
like us. I loved it back there. It was great. They gave me Dr. Pepper. There was a fire juggler.
Mm-hmm. Some
kind people would come and look at the babies.
So it was funded by people wanting to look at a little tiny premature baby?
Yes. Yeah, it was fully funded by people paying their quarters and their nickels and dimes to just go look at tiny babies. And then that was able to fund a full staff of really high quality medical care at the time.
And how many of these were there?
The permanent exhibit was in New York, but he did a lot across the U.S. There was like one at the Chicago's World Fair.
What?
He did it
when they're not permanent, where do the babies go when it closes?
Back to the families. I think he would only take in a certain amount. And then when they were done, or if in like the 1500 cases where they died of whatever, or when they were old, like stable enough, they would just go back to the families. Like any NICU.
Okay, that's very weird. He did not have a medical license, and the people thought he was a bit quacky.
Yeah.
But it was good treatment.
Yeah, so that was what's weird. He's told everyone he had a medical license. It is only recently that historians have tried to dig back and like can't find a degree in his name or a thesis in his name anywhere across Europe. American doctors collaborated with him, but didn't recognize him formally in a lot of their publications because they were like, this guy is clearly doing important obstetrician type work, but also public organizations are like, this is cruel to the babies. And they're the public
Why
opinion
is it
of
cruel
it,
to the babies?
I don't know.
Just because
everybody's
at
looking at
them?
Because
he's profiting off of them?
Yeah.
Did he make money?
Yeah, he didn't make money. Yeah. He made enough money to be able to continue to like build these exhibitions other
but
places.
But did he build like a lake house? Did he like get like a mansion in the heights?
I don't think so. He ended up poor and old, which is why he quit when he was like 70 years old, because he would recoup the costs when there were like disasters as there were at carnivals. But I don't think he ever, like, for example, there was...
Wait a second.
Okay.
As there are at carnivals when there were. I'm terrified. Do I want to know about the disaster?
No, I
All
don't.
All 1,500 babies who didn't make it when the Coney Island caught on fire.
One of them did catch on fire. But apparently no babies died there. I don't have the article up. It's in the sources. But it was expensive because he just lost all the money and some of the reputation of it.
And so when he was 70 years old and he was poor and destitute, he built a little building on the boardwalk and he put his own body into a ventilator and he just people paid nickel to come look at him.
See an old guy. Hey, look at this old guy.
I'm baby.
Yeah, he invented baby.
Yeah. He was the first one. Wow. I formally retract my fact.
I mean, yes, Sam, I'm sorry. This is, they're both very good and they're both in a similar vein. I do kind of want to, like, I want people to hear the story of baby Mozart.
Well, I'm
baby
keeping Mozart. It in the podcast, so.
Oh, well, yeah, this is true. But maybe it's a sideshow. I feel like we need to talk more about, like, collective delusions.
Yeah, that's so a that good we can, idea.
Like, because often I will be like, oh no, that's fake, to a thing that, like, is happening right now.
Yeah.
And people are like, how do you know? And I'm like, I got a vibe. I've heard a lot of these stories before.
Say it out loud to yourself. Listening, having a baby listen to music makes us smarter. No.
Yeah, no. Doesn't make. And particularly one
guy.
Austrian.
Yeah.
I hope Mozart was Austrian. Anyway, Sari is the winner of this week's episode of Sideshow Tangents. Which means that it's time to ask the science couch, where we've got a listener question for our couch of finely honed scientific minds. Sam, what's the question?
Asia 0543814 asks, human baby skulls are just plain weird when they are born.
Yes.
Are there any other species that have strange birth-related adaptations to help them have a smoother birth?
Yeah, I would guess yes. I think that human baby skulls are somewhat unusual.
Head size is a somewhat unusual, right?
Yeah, it seems a little bit like the size of a person's head is limited by, like, there's like an evolutionary battle between how to get a baby's head out of a person and,
right.
and the size of a baby's head can be. So it's like, how smart can we be? How big can the hole in a pelvis be? Which is a little upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, I couldn't find anything with the amount of skull squishiness, whether it's like
it seems
the
like
sutures
a bad,
or skull
bad idea. Like, you wouldn't want a baby to have a squishy skull.
Yeah. And it's like you said, a particularly human thing in just, we don't understand a lot about birth canal size, baby size, why our babies are so premature. I don't know. Like, why humans
need help. We do
better
than pandas, though.
We do better than pandas.
Less,
but we need help to deliver babies. Like, you can't super well deliver a baby by yourself. And that's unusual for other animals too. Like, they can just pop one out.
They just fall, like a giraffe baby just falls all 8 feet to the ground and is like, thanks,
and
mom.
Just gets up and goes on its way. Yeah.
And then it says, giraffe.
But the idea of softness to not hurt the baby or the pregnant animal is a theme among animal babies, which
babies are soft.
Babies are generally soft or have weird soft bits that you would maybe not expect. So a couple that I found, I'm sure there are more, but this is a surprisingly hard thing to Google, and I'm not a zoologist, but I'm sure people who work with animals regularly have more examples. So in hoofed animals, you see this a lot with pictures of horses, because those are one of the most extreme examples. They're called or nicknamed fairy fingers or golden slippers, but really any hoofed animal like pigs or cows have what's called a deciduous hoof capsule. It's also called an epinicium, which is the name for a piece of skin on our fingers too, but it's just like a kind of gooey keratinous structure on top of the hoof so that the hard keratin of the hoof doesn't puncture the birth canal.
They
don't kick around.
That is the worst thing about horses.
Yeah. And horses are more extreme. Like, you can find them for pigs or calves or things like that, and they're less
like boxing
extreme.
Gloves. For babies?
Yeah. And then they dry out within a couple hours and kind of fall off. So they're just there for the birthing process to keep everything squishy, soft, safe. And similarly, porcupines or other species with keratinized quills, their quills are soft. They're there when they're babies.
They're born with squishy quills.
That seems prudent. Harden
once exposed
to
air.
Yeah, because you don't want to puncture the inside of the birth canal.
Just opening the SciShow pitch doc here, how do baby porcupines get born? Any human being would click on that.
Yeah.
They're also called Porcupets, which is very cute.
Oh.
We love it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about porcupines. Well, again, this is fantastic. I got like three SciShow ideas just now. If you want to ask the Science Couch your questions, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week, or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on Discord. Thank you to at Copper Griffin, Ariel the Biologist, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's really easy to do that. First, tell people specifically about this episode, which is the best episode of SciShow Tangents. You can also go to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciShowTangents to become a patron and get access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes. You can also leave us a review wherever you listen. It's super helpful and helps us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just
tell people about us.
Can I? Wait, I got to hop in real quick.
Yes, sir.
It's almost Halloween by the time this airs, but you're not going to want to miss Halloween. You're going to want to trust me on this one. We got some good surprises for you.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bizzio. Our editorial assistant is Debucky Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Seagulls are notoriously not picky about what they eat, scavenging everything from living whale skin to ice cream cones. And after observing South American fur seal pups for 5 years in Chilean Patagonia,
I don't like where this
researchers
is going.
Found that two species of gulls were to blame for a common butt injury. The gulls attacked a bunch of two-month-old baby seals infected with hookworm because their bloody, parasite-ridden diarrhea is apparently a tasty snack.
Oh my God. I hear so many science facts, Sam, and I never get like a nauseatic response. I look at so many pictures of awful, that did it.
Well, there's
a
little bit.
That's the first time that's happened to me in a decade.
While they're eating this diarrhea, the gulls get a little too eager and they end up biting the baby seal's anuses and perineal regions, leaving plenty of wounded butts after their feasts.
It's still affecting me. I just think that it's the mix of blood and diarrhea
and worms
yeah. being eaten.
Yeah.
And like this, like secondarily is like the injury to the seal pup, but all now it is the worst episode of SciShow Camp.
The most undignified thing that a bird has ever done, I believe.
What is the worst thing about seagulls? There it is.